everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Book Legion podcast, where we're going to be talking DC Comics. I am Mark, and with me, we got Clay. What's up, dude?
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, not much. Dude, I love your shirt.
I know. I love your shirt, dude. It's the one thing...
Well, mine is more in tune with what we talk about, which is Dark Knight's metal. But you got Powerline.
I know.
Powerline, for all those who love Goofy Movie, raise your hand. I can't see you, so it doesn't matter. But Powerline, he is the man. So that shirt's gorgeous.
Dude, I will say Oh, man, I almost forgot the song. I know the song. I know the song. At the very end of the movie. I lost it.
Now you put me on the spot. Like, Dad, wait. Do the perfect cast. Stand up.
Stand up. That's what it is. That is stand up. So stand up, I will admit, is on a playlist that I have for if I ever get down during the day. I play stand up, and my day is 100%.
Nobody else but you. There's a clue.
With the road trip song.
Yeah, that's the song. Didn't they like sing that song?
No, that was the one where
when they were getting ready to fall down the water, like the waterfall.
They were drifting in the river. Yeah.
Or seeing like Bigfoot jamming to the Bee Gees. Oh, gosh. Man, you know, I got to see this movie. I have to see it again. It's been a while.
Today is actually my day off, so I may, if I can't find it, because like I told you before the recording started, the Disney Club is having it on Blu-ray, but I don't really want to sign up to that because I'm going to sign up to Disney in November, so
yeah.
I may just have to like buy it digitally. And watch it today. So
yeah, I mean, dude, I have it still. I think I have it in cassette, like in VHS.
Oh, I have it VHS.
For those who don't know what VHS is, it's just a big block. It's like a brick that plays movies. But yeah, I'm really I gotta see it because just seeing that shirt, it brings happy memories.
So good.
It's been like a good like 5 years since I've seen it.
Oh, it's I would have to say it's about the same time. Yeah. Four or five. So,
we got this. We're gonna watch it. We're gonna do a live stream of Goofy Movie. Well, anyways, man. So besides that, it's New Comic Book Day for us. It's Wednesday, April the 17th. I haven't gotten to my comic book shop yet, but that's normally what I do immediately after we're done recording. I say, "Shut up, Clay." I hang up and then I leave and I go buy comics. That's my routine.
You know, Unfortunately,
I don't say shut up. I don't say shut up.
I unfortunately went digital for majority of my comics. I only have two titles in my subscription right now, and that's the two Power Rangers titles. But a friend of mine, we went like, I think, four or five ways on that Nicola Scott Detective 1000 cover.
Yeah, which is like very, it symbolizes pretty much the same one that she did for Superman. I don't know if you have that one.
Yeah, I do. We did the same thing last year for Superman, but because we split it up, it didn't cost so much, and they just came in, so at around, in about 7 hours, I have to be at my comic shop, because the person who got it mailed to them, they're going to have it at my comic shop. I'm going to go meet up with them. Get my Detective Comics, hang out with everybody that I used to work, and...
Yeah, well, what I do now is I usually just go digital now, because it's kind of hard to continue justifying buying another comic book box, and the wife seeing you come in and building the long box, and she goes, "Oh, great, here's another..." Oh, I see him. Nice. She's like, "Oh, here's a..." "Oh, God, great, here's another 300 comics to add to the..." So I think every time she sees a new, I don't think she pays attention to how many comics I buy until she realizes, wait, you're getting another box? So that's another 200 plus comics? How many comics do you buy? It's like one of those things. So I'm like, oh, God. So, yeah, I think what I've started to do is just do the Comixology thing and kind of just suck it up, even though I dig the physical copies.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm doing is really my physical copies that I'm buying now are really just the covers that I absolutely adore.
Yeah.
So I don't really mind that I'm buying the same book twice to read.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care. But it's because like for my wall, and now for those who have listened to our show, you know that I'm currently looking and buying another house and having like a even larger space. I can't think of how awesome it would be to have so many of these gorgeous DC comic like B variant covers.
Oh, that would be so
like
good.
To be placed on the wall, because now it would in a way it'll look like original art, because I mean the title is very small right on the bottom.
Oh yeah.
So you're not getting the huge like Batman 47, like it doesn't matter. You're just going to see Francisco Matina or Joshua Middleton or Doc Shaner, and it's going to be like, man, this is really cool art. And I'm like, yes, it's a comic book.
Oh yeah no, I will say, Mark, your wall has inspired so many who put their own wall
that's
up.
Yeah, that's honestly, dude, this was my, I really just wanted to share it online because this is something that I've always wanted, just to have kind of like a mural to what I love.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really expensive. 3D, I mean 3D, like the poppers that come out on the wall, dude, they're like $14 for one.
Yeah. No.
And I'm like, dude, that's way too expensive. So I had to figure out a way. I mean, even these, I have the current size comic book top loaders.
Uh-huh.
Now, they're expensive as well. Luckily, I found someone on eBay. I didn't go through like BCW and spend an arm and a leg where it's like $20 for 10. I didn't do that.
Uh-huh.
I found a couple of people that were just selling them in a lot. And I paid like 50 for like 75.
Oh, nice.
Top loaders. Now, my wall carries 180 comics. So I just kept on trying to find the eBays, the Craigslist, trying to do it that way.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not spending crazy amounts of money.
Well,
and yeah, and then it was,
I will say, double. Mine is going to cost a lot because I also want to put a wall up, but I don't want to put it exactly like yours. I'm going to put a wall of...
What are you trying to say? No, I'm joking.
I'm going to put a wall of graded comics onto my wall.
Okay.
And okay. I don't have enough graded books to put it up there. So I'm spending an arm and a leg to get that graded book. And then...
Okay. How are you going to do it, though? You're going to get, like, the wood and just have them, like,
no, so planked? So there's these clamps, basically, that you buy that drill into the wall. And then you slide the into those clamps, and then it just holds it. So I'll put those side by side, and then just have the slide in.
See, like, that seems much easier. Because with a hole, I mean, let's just say you move, whatever. That's just, you get some spackle and you cover it. My friggin' wall is double stick taped. So when I'm removing this, it's going to be like, I'm just going to be ripping drywall everywhere. So I'm either going to have to redo drywall, or I don't even know. But that's a nightmare that I'm just trying not to, you know, think about right now.
Uh-huh.
Because that'll be later on. But yeah, I have 180 comics in a top loader, double stick taped to my wall. I do not recommend, if you're planning on doing something stupid like I am, which is move after 3 years after getting a house. Just shut up, man. I see your... I feel your judgment, but...
Oh, man. No, it's just like, just when you think about it, you're like, oh man, this is such a good idea. Because I own this house, it's going to be awesome. And then you get that conversation 3 years down the line. I think I want more space. I think it's time to move.
That's the worst part, is because when people talk about my wall and they still like mention it to me, I'm like, yeah, I don't recommend this if you're doing this for a short period. He's like, and I remember, like, if I go back to my text that I wrote, maybe like the messages on Twitter that I wrote a year earlier from now, it would be like, oh, if you're planning on moving or hating comics in the future, like, I don't recommend doing what I did. But since I know I'm going to be here for the long haul, I'm like, joke's on you. So that's how I feel right now. Like, I feel like a doofus. So, anyways, let's jump into comic books, because I don't know if people just want to hear us ramble about Powerline.
I do have to ask.
Yo.
What was your top book for this week? You know, we always do the top five of whatever DC books come out. We already have our five books, and I just want to know, what was your top one?
I'm going to say, because of the reveal, I'll say Naomi.
Okay.
Just because... First, I was really excited because of the... Wait, are we breaking this down, or you just wanted to know?
I just want to,
because then I didn't want to just jump into a book and then,
because that's what we can start off with. So
okay, all right, Naomi was a book that I felt honestly that I'm trying to see like the best way to say it, because I enjoyed a lot of the books, but I can't really think of one that stood out over all the others.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I love the deep dive in Batman. Awesome. Justice League, the stuff of Perpetua, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I kind of wish that we were still continuing with the whole Sixth Dimension thing.
Yeah.
Anyways, we'll get to that. So with Naomi, I was really curious. I want to know, dude, what's up with the dad? What's going on here? What's his story? And I love that in issue 3, you kind of got Dee's point of view on how he got here.
Mm-hmm.
And his issues with Rand.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of like, now you're with Naomi's dad. I don't even know his dad's name. But
did we ever get an...
I don't know, because I get mom and dad, but I don't... I've never really, like, paid attention if when the parents are actually talking to each other, if, you know, they have... If they've, like, you know, discussed it. So I have no idea what the name is. But with Dee... Now getting Naomi's dad, and he's telling his side of the story, that he was part of, like, an elite squadron, and he is from, you know, being part of, like, Ran, and he was part of, like, the Ran and Thanagarian War, and them colliding, and I'm like, oh, cool, like, this is, you're pretty much getting both views between...
What I like about this book is, and I will say this, because I actually wrote a separate review for... this book, Naomi as a whole, Bendis, you can say whatever you want about what he has done with Superman and action. I will probably 100% with Naomi. It is so hard for him to really mess up on his creator own. Like, yeah. This.
Well, not only Bendis, but also Walker. Like, David Walker, yeah, is also writing. So, I mean, like, they have... They have, like, a really good tandem working together.
Yeah. And, you know, with Naomi, I loved it first issue. I loved it second issue. You know that I was a little, you know, off on the third issue just because of how it ended. But
yeah,
this issue helped a lot more. I absolutely love the fact that, you know, we didn't think... Dee had any connection to Naomi.
Mm-hmm.
We were wrong. Dee was there when she... Well, let's move it to, you know, the whole Thanagarian Rand War. Naomi's father, his mission was to follow the Thanagarian, who, that being,
yes,
Dee. Then, when he finally, you know, because he said he studied the Earth culture... And Earth language and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So he was basically a perfect human in disguise. And he finally found Dee and saw that Dee wasn't doing it. Dee was just being a normal human being.
Yeah.
And so he's like, well, if he's not hurting anybody, there's no need for me to hurt anybody.
So he decides to turn around and sees this beautiful woman and falls in love.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And in... And those are, and that's like the stuff that I really like. I love that they name dropped, not for like selfish, like, oh, I called it, but like, you know, seeing that it was connected with like Adam Strange.
Because,
mm-hmm, you know, you could just mention Ran and then that's it.
Yeah.
But the fact that he kind of like name drops, like, oh, Adam Strange, oh, you'll love him. We're good friends. Like, it was kind of nice knowing like there is that, that connection.
I want to know, because he also says that he went to a friend to learn about the material that he gives Naomi at the end of the book. And we'll talk about that a little bit more. But when he, mm-hmm, when he says that, he says, oh, I talked to a friend and he didn't know what it was. I'm still thinking, is he still talking about Strange at that point? Or do you think he's talking to, like, about a Ted Kord or, you know, Hal Jordan or, you know...
I'm thinking it's a Green Lantern. And the reason why is because... Although when he does reveal what you were just mentioning, that he has no idea when he was speaking with his friend, is this box. And this box has a symbol that, for me, I immediately thought, I'm like, oh, dude, is she a Black Lantern? or like a white lantern, because those symbols are very close. They're not exact. So then my own version was, oh, wow, I wonder if this is like a logo in a sense that maybe she resembles both.
Mm-hmm.
So she's just a being that represents life and death. I'm like, whoa, okay, because that's kind of intense. Then I was talking with Kevin, one of our writers, and Kevin was mentioning, he's like, dude, but when he's like, but remember that her outfit, because, you know, with the whole teaser, I think like on issue 6 or something, with the whole like Young Justice Squad, it doesn't really resemble anything of like a lantern. And I'm like, well, that's true. And then when you kind of see where she was wrapped, it had like a, that emblem. That emblem kind of looks like a guardian, like Guardian's shield. Or I'm like, if, I mean, I don't really think it's going to be like a Dr. Fate, like a Fate's like helmet. Like it kind of looked like Guardian's shield. So, I mean, I don't really know. Like my brain is definitely, you know, going a million miles an hour trying to figure it out, which I think is, that's the point. You want to talk about what this could potentially be, what is her future. So I dig it, man, but I'm thinking my theory was that she's some sort of a host that just contains life and death.
You know, and I really, really like the fact that, you know, Naomi's father tells the story about how they met, the parents met, and, you know, eventually throughout time, they wanted a kid and they couldn't because, you know, and the mother said, because of who he is, you know, foster homes and adoption agencies look into everything. So it would be very hard to hide the fact that he's an alien. So that's why they never officially adopted anybody. And then one night his little alarm thing goes off, but not a human alarm. The alien tech alarm goes off and sends him off into like this football field, and he sees D there, and he's like about to, you know, he pulls out his gun. Probably one of my favorite scenes in this book. He pulls out a gun and he tells D, hey, you know, I have this gun, but it's only for my safety. And D just like looks at him and stares. He's like, yeah, mine went off too, you know, as far as like an alert. And that's when you see this wormhole open up. Almost, was it more like a boom tube? I don't know if it was a boom tube or if it was some sort of, I know in the DC universe, we all just kind of chalk everything up to a boom tube. But with this person coming out and three individuals trying to attack her, we see that she is holding a baby.
Yeah, I mean, if it was, honestly, if it was only like females, I might have believed that maybe they were part of maybe like in the training of like a female fury, and maybe they have escaped and this is like one of their ways. And I can kind of believe it. But knowing that there were like two dudes in the background would make me think that this is not really like apocalypse like tech.
Yeah.
It would be more in regards to, you know, they just have some sort of like a teleport, kind of like D. I mean, D kind of just got shot out and he landed on Earth. So it kind of seems a little similar to that.
And because I just looked back at it also, I just want to say, this is a book that I ordered 2 months in advance. So I'm still going to get this physical copy, but I want to know what this book's, the panels on are intent.
And I love that the thing is like with us being in digital, I remember it's like the day that we get the books, you're like, Naomi's only 14 pages.
Oh yeah, no, I was almost livid. I was like, are you kidding me? Like how, like with what is about to drop as far as the bomb that we get, you're only going to give me 14 pages. And that's unfortunately what I do have a problem with it because of all the stuff that we get a lot of information, but I feel like it's just not enough. It's like right there at the brim to being completely satisfying, but there's not enough. I know that each book needs to have a cliffhanger. I know that's kind of what Bendis's big thing is to always have these big cliffhangers to where, you know, it's almost the 90s form.
Yeah.
And I just want a little bit more. I just and I know that's how he got me, and he's gonna get me to read Naomi number 5, and he'll probably get me to read the rest of this book because it's so good.
Well, I think it stops at 6.
It stops at 6? Like,
yeah, because they're treating this like it looks like they're treating the Young Justice, and this is probably just to give him some time since he's writing about 800 books. That the Young Justice, maybe the main flagship title, will probably be like an ongoing, but everything like Wonder Twins, Dial H, all that, they're going in like what they're considering season. So the first six issues is season 1. And then we will get, and so then they'll almost, go to like a season 2.
Almost like what Weatherman is doing now.
Yes, they're doing something along those lines, which will, you know, allow. So maybe Young Justice, or if you want to consider like the real Teen Titans.
Yikes.
Maybe that, sorry, I had to throw that out there. What's it called? Like maybe that's possibly what's going on, and that might just be an ongoing, and maybe Naomi will join them sooner or later. Once we maybe, I mean, we got 2 issues left, so we'll figure out if we'll finally figure out who she is, like truly, like everything.
Yeah.
So I mean, only time will tell. But I would say that normally the first book that I read every week is Batman. I read Naomi first this week. Like that's where I was like, I needed to know what the dealio was after the reveal from last week.
I will say Naomi was the second book I read. I read Batman first. Well, no.
Okay.
No. I lie. I wrote Naomi first. You're right. I read Naomi first. Batman was the second I read.
And honestly, the reason why is just that the last issue of Nightmares left such a bad taste in my mouth that even though I knew because Tom King said you would see Thomas Wayne, spoiler alert, Thomas Wayne, in this book, I figured it was going to be another, like, kind of like a smaller deep dive into something, but you'll just see him in the last page.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but I was pleasantly surprised that I saw him a lot more than what I thought I was, and in a way, I didn't want that.
Well, let's go ahead and jump into Batman.
Okay.
So, let me tell you my experience about Batman. So, I've never done this before, but if you open Batman to the first page, you see Bruce Wayne in a tuxedo, and you see music, and you see lyrics. So you look at lyrics, and, you know, I was like, you know what? I've never done this before. I'm going to see if this is a legitimate song. Because,
dude, you know, I've never done that.
Because for me, I like, whenever I'm, like, reading stuff that should be music or lyrics, and I don't know the song, I'm just coming up with a melody, and it just sounds really bad in my head.
Okay.
So, this is an actual song that I put on repeat, and I just listen to it the entire time I'm reading the book. It felt so cool doing that. Because
who's the artist?
This is like an old 1940s like song. Let me see if I can find it real quick. I know that.
Yeah, some of these days you'll miss my hugging, it's my kisses. This is my way of trying to fill the silence gap.
I know.
While you're feeling, while you're, this is Radio 101, no silence. I'm just gonna keep this, so people can see how that this is legit and this is just not a massively edited show.
What is the first? It's One of These Days?
Some of these days, you'll miss your honey.
Okay.
Well, anyways,
so
while you're searching...
So
oh, you found
yeah,
it. Okay.
It's Sophie Tucker, Some of These Days. It's a song from 1926.
Nice.
So it is an old song. It's a... Like, when you hear it, it is definitely a very, very old song. At first, I was like, I don't know if I want to listen to this the entire time I'm reading this. But it gave a really cool vibe for when... Because the entire book, Bruce and Catwoman, Selina, they're dancing. And in the very beginning, he's like, Selina, dance with me. And she's like, well, Bruce, slow your roll. don't demand anything from a woman. You need to ask. And so
pretty much she's like, yeah, she's like, you poor boy. She's like, don't demand me. Yeah. Just ask.
Yeah, she says, just ask. And so, you know, you see him ask. And it's so cool because it kind of goes through the ages. Batman stays the same in his newer DC Universe suit. It's not his it's not his old one. But you see Catwoman go from her original suit to what she is now. Well, she goes from Selina to her Catwoman suit, and it goes on to her, like, all the way to her original suit, and then back to the suit she was wearing, the dress she was wearing at the beginning of the book.
Yeah, I wonder if that was a creative choice that you see him in the new one, because during issues, I think, 51, 53, mm-hmm. when they did, like, 12 Angry Men, like, the whole courthouse stuff,
yeah.
and he decided that he was no longer going to be, you know, grieving over what happened and what the decision was, and he's like, you know what, this suit, the rebirth, the Snyder suit, pretty much, Scott Snyder represented this, and he's like, I can't with that anymore. Well, and they're going back, so it made me feel that. Well, go ahead, because I feel like I'm going to ruin something what you're trying to get to.
No. Well, like in the Cold Days story arc at the very end, it was such Lee Weeks art. Oh my gosh.
Yes, Lee Weeks is one of my favorite artists.
That last page, he says, we have to go back to our roots. And
yes.
He has the old emblem on his suit, the trunks, everything. And it just looks almost like, I would say almost like 60s Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Like just with the shadows and everything. Well, no, I wouldn't say 60s. I would say almost like 40s movie Batman.
Okay.
Like that kind of suit. And of course, you know, with just different artists, it looks better. And depending on how, you know, Tom King wanted it portrayed, it would look finer and everything else. But the cool thing that I got out of this book is, you know, with the music still playing in the background of me reading this. And like I said, I had to put on repeat because there's no way I'm going to read a 22-page book in 3 minutes. But we get a glimpse of Bane and Thomas Wayne. And so we are seeing outside of the nightmares at this. And so we see them sparring. And Thomas Wayne is just beating the crap out of Bane. And
does it bother you that you were seeing him that much, though?
No, not really. Only because it doesn't push the narrative on where Batman is. Like, if it was like if in the background of them sparring we see Batman tied up to like all these machines, that would have bothered me. I don't know why, but okay. That would have bothered me.
No, it's just that there's so much clouded. You know, there's so much mystery surrounding what the heck is Thomas Wayne doing here?
Uh-huh.
Considering you haven't seen him since he said, don't be Batman, which was a reference that you see, well, you know, Bruce kind of talking to Selina about.
Bruce was talking to Selina about it, but even Thomas himself told Bane, he's like, you know, I don't want Bruce to be Batman.
Yeah.
And I recently read a article with Tom King just here recently talking about what Thomas Wayne's motives are with working with him. And that's his number one motive. So everybody's like, Thomas Wayne is evil, and so he's going to, you know, try to kill Batman too. And like symbolically, yes, he's going to try to kill Batman. And have Bruce Wayne just be, and I think, you know, and Tom King also said we're gonna finally see how Thomas Wayne got out of his world before it like completely was destroyed, you know, with the whole story with the button back yep. in issue like, but we see Bane and Thomas, they're sparring, and we see Thomas Wayne win the spar. He's like, okay, I'm done. You know, I had fun sparring with you, Bane, but we need to get down to business. And Bane just wants more. And so he attacks Thomas, and he gets him in a grip with his hand, like, around his neck. And he's like, you need to understand that everyone else is nothing, and I am Bane. And all of a sudden, Thomas Wayne just pulls a gun out of his pocket, which that bothered me a little bit, just because that pocket did not look like he had a gun in it, for one. But
yeah.
Oh, man, I feel sneeze. But he pulls the gun out of his pocket and puts it up to Bane's head, and Bane says, "You're not like him, you cheat." He's like, "No, I win." And I thought that was probably one of the, like, badass lines, like, one-liners I have, like, that was a Batman line. I'm sorry. That was a Batman line.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, that's the part that conflicts me, because, I mean, you're getting a really beautiful moment in regards to pretty much Bruce wanting to know the answer, why did Selina leave him? And it's, you get those, and it's a beautiful moment with the dancing. I didn't try the music thing. I'm going to actually read it again with the music and just to kind of see, because I can feel like that will create an interesting atmosphere. So I want to see what that is. But then it's like in the middle, you're getting the Thomas Wayne Bane thing. It feels odd there. Like it feels kind of like out of place, considering how Nightmares has been placed, where it's pretty much the entire issue, you're in the nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And now I don't know. And it's like every time they've shown Thomas, it's always been either in the Flashpoint suit. Here you have him in pajamas, and he's sparring a naked Bane. And it's kind of like I don't know. I kind of just wanted the introduction for the last time that we see him, and he's just towering over Alfred, and he's like, "Your father," you know. I wanted it to be that when I see him for the first time since then, it's more in one of those menacing kind of ways, instead of him looking like Deathstroke in sweatpants sparring. Like that's, so it's kind of like that's what bothered me. It's just the creative decision on having him there.
Yeah.
Like the way that they did. I don't care if they're sparring and Bane just wants to, you know, get his feathers rustled and just to get angry and that kind of stuff. And they're just fighting and, you know, they're both having an ego of who's tougher and who's more vital. Okay. That stuff. Within these people and their levels, I can kind of see that. I don't know. I just felt very disruptive in regards to
mm-hmm.
Bruce wanting to know pretty much out of the horse's mouth why. And she pretty much just reveals that, you know, she's like, you don't love me.
Well, and I thought about that a lot. You know, I do appreciate this with this book in particular. Whenever I read a comic, I usually don't read it twice. A lot of people read books multiple times. I usually read it once. And I'm like, okay, I got the premise of the book. And then, of course, I talk about it here with you guys. But with this book, I read this book and I thought about it. He is technically still in a nightmare. And he explains to Selina, he explains to the embodiment of this nightmare, "I figured it out. I figured it out a while back that this is something to do with Scarecrow."
Yes.
So I have to imagine my worst nightmare to basically give me an overdose for my body to counteract it.
Which is genius.
Which is insane. But I have to believe that everything that Selina says is a lie. Because that is his worst nightmare.
Oh, I believe that Bruce really does love Selina. So I do agree that this is more because of the moment that he's in, that he's in a nightmare. So he has to hear his worst nightmare,
yeah,
which is he's in love with the vow and the promise of the bat, but he doesn't love her. Yeah. Like I understand that part. Now, it's like this part is like so emotional.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I was...
then you're just, yeah, it's just like you get that counteract. But I do want to give kudos because Yannick Paquette is one of, like, I didn't like him so much until I saw him in Swamp Thing. On Swamp Thing, okay. with Snyder in New 52.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, I don't know, maybe it's because he's always been associated so much with, like, Grant Morrison on the stuff that I read with, like, Batman Inc. That Morrison is so trippy that I was like, oh, maybe that kind of combination bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was never a fan. But I get very excited whenever I see Yannick Paquette, and this issue was gorgeous.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
It really was. I love the different aesthetic change whenever they are, like, they're basically dancing through Gotham.
Yeah, it's like, it's a wonderful tapestry of, like, dancing in the rain, but it is. They're just dancing, and it's kind of like the raindrops or anything are the musical notes in the background, and it's very, like, La La Land.
I will say.
Like, it's cool.
I almost forgot about Selena's green outfit as Catwoman until I saw it here, and I absolutely love the character design of Selena as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, going back to the whole this thing is a nightmare thing, and, you know, everything being a lie, I will admit, whenever Tom King makes it so believable that you're like, no, this isn't true, this can't be true, Batman can love, and, you know, and that was the biggest argument for issue 50, like the aftermath, yeah, and everything else. You know, we saw waves and waves of people fighting for the fact that Batman, Bruce Wayne, can be happy with a family, which I think is cool. I just want to say that for the community to kind of make that push and, you know, show DC what we want to see, and hopefully we will get that. There is a couple theories that I have read that I have for the next arc. Now, we know that the next arc, I think, is called, like,
it's the fall.
The fall.
After the nightmares is the fall.
Yeah, it's the fall. And it's basically the aftermath of the nightmares and how he's going to bring that to his, you know, coming out of the nightmares, how he's not necessarily going to be evolved, but he's going to learn from those.
Yes.
And then after the fall, it is
It's a showdown with Bane,
yeah,
because I feel like it's been teased, like issue 75 or something.
Yeah, issue 75.
Where there's going to be something there.
It's like the City of Bane, I think it's called.
Okay.
And it's going to be, of course, a part of the Year of the Villain. So, of course, it's going to be Bane Center. And
oh my gosh, dude, those covers.
I know.
All the covers for the Year of the Villains. I immediately, when I saw them solicited, I emailed my comic book store. I'm like, add these all to my pull. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, but we're not going to have these because these are like 1 in 200s, 1 in 500s, 1 in 1,000. We don't order that many. I'm like, no, I'm talking about these. And I like screenshotted and I sent them like every single, because these are just going to be like
I don't know if they're
the A covers or B covers.
They should either be the B covers or it'll be a random like one shot Year of the Villain type thing.
So I told them and they're like, okay, well, let me just remind me. For, like, the next solicitation, like, when you actually get them attached to, like, an issue.
So,
but I'm like, oh, my gosh, did you see the Oracle? I'm like, that was amazing.
Yeah, so comic shops, the way it is, because if you guys haven't known, I used to work at a comic shop.
He's a comic snob.
So the way it goes is the comic shops won't have any information other than what we know as fans when it's announced. The only way they can put something on a subscription is if it's put into the previews. Because at that point, that's when the comic shops can update their database with the info that is from a retailer called Diamond that they get all their stuff from. And then that is when you can ask your local comic book shop about those issues. The only reason why is because I don't have any doubt that you guys have faith in your local comic shop, and I don't want you to lose faith in your comic book shop, but whenever you go and, oh, this was announced, you know, put it down for me, most of them will forget about it. So
that's actually when I lived in Florida, that happened all the time. And sometimes they would just randomly say, oh, they just didn't come into the box. Like it's a late shipment or something. And then they're like, oh, call back. And they're like, oh, no, we just sold the one. Like, that happens all the time. Luckily, I go to Spandex City Comics in here. And they're probably the best comic book store that I have ever been to in terms of customer service. The way that I'm with Jeremy. I mean, Jeremy, I'm at the desk and he gives me the previews. And I'm like, dude, okay, this cover. Yeah, we're going to add him. He's like, so what are the artists you like? And I'm like, I love Matina. I like Middleton. He's like, you know what? Whatever comes from these artists, I'm just going to put in your box. And if this is a book that you don't even care, like, I've never read, besides Lazarus Contract, I have not read Deathstroke. But I have like 5 Deathstroke covers because of how beautiful they are.
Because they're and so that's good.
Exactly. And it's because it was Mateena. So he just has me. I'm like, all right, dude, I love Doc Shaner. If Mitch Gerards is doing a cover, I want it. If, anyways, like, you get the point.
Yeah.
And they are like, I have yet to be, like, I have, honestly, he even knew, I don't think he did, but this was like when Batman Damned came out, I bought 2 issues of Batman Damned, just because since we get the digital copies, I knew about the peepee. So I figured that people were going to go nuts and they were going to overreact. I even said, dude, is there a Batman Damned, like, at your store? Because I saw they were going for, like, $150. He goes, oh, I don't know, but let me see, and maybe Diamond hasn't pulled them yet. And he's like, you know what? Oh, he was able to get me another one. So I was able to get another one for the $7.
Nice.
And then, just flip it. I love my comic book store. They take good care of me.
Speaking of flipping books, it's not something that I necessarily agree with, but
yeah.
For anybody who owns a Naomi number 4 at this point and got it for cheap, apparently it's going for high dollars for now.
Yeah.
And I will...
Naomi number 1 is... Woo.
I will tell you this, guys. For working at a comic book shop, the lower tier employees, not necessarily top tier at the comic shop, us lower tier employees at comic shops hate the comic book market outside of comic book shop because it kind of ruins it for everybody else who wants to. I don't necessarily agree with spending $150 for Batman Dam because the DC didn't, if they wanted it to be $150, they would have sold it for $150 for people to read.
Yeah.
It. And that's my stand on it. But with Naomi number 4, I think that if Naomi all the way through issue 6 is really, really good, all those books will hold their value. But if it crashes, I kind of feel sorry for everybody else who kind of went after it.
Yeah, yeah. The overreaction, it's kind of like it's really easy to take advantage of the overreactors. Because it's like, I don't normally, I have probably, well, in my time of like during financial struggles and I knew how people would like overreact, I 100% was one of those people that, I was never like that guy that takes all 20 books
mm-hmm.
from a shelf.
Yeah.
But I'll grab like an extra one. Like I'll buy 2 copies, one for me and one that I figured like to take advantage. But that Batman Damned, because that was, I don't understand what the overreaction was. And like that one was, that was crazy. But yeah. I think we've talked about it already before.
Yeah.
Overall,
we know that Batman is coming out of the nightmares. Next issue will be outside of the nightmares. We don't have any more nightmares anymore. I'm excited to see how he will react coming face to face with Thomas because we've seen these covers, you know, coming out on Twitter and online. Of majority of these covers are with Batman and Flashpoint Batman both on the cover. So we know they're going to interact. We know that it'll probably be emotional. We know that it'll probably be get aggressive after a while. So I'm really interested to see how this goes. But
well, what I'll just do really quickly, just to kind of get this one out of the way, since I know we've gone longer with like 2 of the bigger books, is Teen Titans. Teen Titans 29, this is part 3 of the Terminus Agenda by Adam Glass, Bernard Chang. So we're back with like the, you know, the big lips. And
yeah.
That was the first thing. That's the first thing I started looking at with the book. I was like, oh God, it's back to the lips. And honestly, this feels like this is just a direct continuation of what happened in part 1 with Wally finding out about the prison. And he's pissed off with Damian. How can you hide this from us? The team needs to know. No, there's bigger things at play. They shouldn't know that yet. He sees Emiko, and he's like, of course, Emiko, you would be part of the secrecy. So you're getting kind of like the conflicts between the team
mm-hmm.
in regards to what's going on. Then you're getting, dude, I'm forgetting, Roundhouse, which is, yeah, Roundhouse. He's figuring, he's working on some stuff because of what happened in part 2 with his suit, and he kind of became like Jell-O, and he was just getting messed up. So he's working on his suit, but he's noticing that there is a tension between the Titans Tower, like their house. Like it's really uncomfortable. Like he's noticing it, and it's because of Wally and what he just, you know, what he just saw. Mm-hmm. So now he's dealing with stuff, but he can't. He's, even though he's against the secrets, he's keeping the secret of himself. So he's kind of contradicting himself. Between that, you got Damian working with Emiko. They're training. Of course, you can kind of see that Deathstroke is still in his head, and he starts to take training a little bit too serious, and he starts, instead of seeing Emiko, he's just picturing Deathstroke. So I don't want to say that he was close to wanting to kill Emiko, but it looked like he was close to wanting to kill Emiko because of that, until she kind of headbutted him and like busted his nose, and he's like, oh, sorry, I took that a little too far. Outside of that, I mean, I don't really feel, I mean, besides, but again, I haven't been reading Teen Titans.
Mm-hmm.
Besides this, so I don't know what Dijin and Crush's relationship has been, but in this issue, Crush kind of reveals that he likes Dijin, that she likes Dijin, and she actually goes up to her and lets her know by kissing her, and, you know, there's a huge splash page. Dijin kind of got into like those days where now Robin wants to talk business, but she just got kissed, and now I think her emotions are all over the place, where he has his eyes turned back and she's like floating up in the air. So that part, okay, we'll see what happens within them.
You know,
so
I always feel like there has to be some sort of relationship in Teen Titans, and I don't know if it's like a teenage trope that needs to happen every single time. You know, we always have it with Beast Boy and Raven, or Beast Boy and Terra in some reiterations of Titans. But now we get it from Dijin and Crush. And I just don't know. I don't know how exactly I feel about it.
Yeah, I don't know. It, to me, it doesn't really make one big of a difference, because I'm probably not going to read this book after this event. So it's like, whatever happened, yeah, I don't even care. But I hope that whoever is digging the book likes the characters. Awesome. I hope you guys are happy. In between that, you got Wallace, with Emiko trying to figure, like, how can you just do this? How can you just live in secrets? And he's like, well, you don't understand. I was raised in this as being, like, you know, like a killer. Like, this is just, like, what it's like. Like, me and Damian have had way, like, two completely different lives than the way that you grew up, Wallace. So it's kind of like, you don't understand what we're going through. And, like, Wallace, he's just kind of like tired of all this. And it kind of seems like Wallace, since Rebirth, is known for kind of like hanging around, and then someone kind of like betrays his trust and he just wants to run away. Like, I feel like that's every time I see him in the Flash book, he helps for a bit, but he's like, no, Barry, it's just that you're always hiding, and he just runs. And it looks like he was about to do that again in this one. But Emiko was, which was a nice character moment between them both, said, like, no, we need you to stay because you're the only one that has, like, a moral compass. And we need that. Like, the Teen Titans need Kid Flash. Like, we need you. So I thought that was cool. Besides that, I mean, there's Deathstroke is back to being tied up. So, again, I don't know if between Deathstroke having, like, a Slurpee and speaking with Damian at the end of Part 2, if that was a... Like, okay, because they never showed that he was going to get tied up again in this moment of the book.
Well, there is a cliff note when, after Emiko and Robin are sparring, she says, oh, well, is Deathstroke still in your head? I noticed the footage from yesterday or whatever. And it,
yes,
and it tells you.
She did.
Read Deathstroke number 42. But with the way this book goes, doesn't even act like that book ever even.
Yeah, so that's the thing. It just feels like this should be Part 2. And they're just kind of throwing, like, little subtle nods, which I guess it's fine, because it's kind of like, I guess, not overstepping what the other writer did. So it's kind of like, let's kind of do something together, but we're not going over each other's toes. But anyways, Deathstroke is tied up. I'm assuming, because he starts speaking when he's like, I can hear you breathing, kid. I'm assuming maybe he's talking to Jericho. Because Jericho in Part 2 of this story was kind of mentioned, like, do you need my help? And then out of nowhere, you're just starting to see all the cliques and the villains that were tied up in Robin's prison Now it looks like they're all running free, and that's how it ends, with Damian getting ready to go down to his prison, and all the villains are, you know, because you see Black Mask, you see Brother Blood, you see Gizmo, you see them there. So, I mean, it looks like I have no idea what's going to happen in part four, but I don't know. It kind of seems like this story is getting even more uninteresting to me. And I don't
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the same that it was to me. You know, I was honest with you, and I said that I didn't really get the chance to read. Unfortunately, it doesn't have the interest that a crossover book should have.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
it's lacking.
We had Batman and Deathstroke last year about the whole "Is Deathstroke your real father?" thing with Robin. And that one seemed pretty cool. You know, we had, like you said, awesome covers from Matina, both crossing over to Batman and this book. So it gave incentive for people to want to grab at least the physical copies. But to actually read it, it was a fun little thing that they did. This almost feels a little forced.
Yes. Yeah, it's not enjoyable. It's kind of, I'm not... And the thing is that people keep on telling me how great Christopher Priest is, but from what I'm reading in his Deathstroke stuff, I don't like it. And what he did taking over Brian Hitch on Justice League, I don't like that. I didn't like that either. So I don't. There's got to be where either this stuff, this Deathstroke solo, is incredible, or maybe stuff that he's done in the past, maybe with Marvel or something, was good. But I don't get the hype between his work, because I haven't enjoyed any of it.
I know that he did, from what I've heard, haven't read it yet, but I've heard that Christopher Priest did a really good run on Black Panther at one point over at Marvel. I have also heard that he did pretty good things in Deathstroke. I think he took over Kyle Higgins after Kyle Higgins left the book in New 52, but I'm not entirely sure, so I would have to look up that as well. So.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. But, yeah, getting out of Teen Titans, Aquaman. So what did you think? This is your second comic of Aquaman after the issue that we loved last month, which was issue 46. Now we're at 47. What did you think of the finale?
So I really enjoyed this book. Some places were a little all over the place, so it was hard to keep up. But we finally get our answer for the tattoos, and that's something I want to talk to you about later on, because it happens at the end of the book. But with this story, we, you know, jump into it exactly where we had left off, with Nama being the dragon sea creature, salt creature, and all of the gods showing up, and, you know, they're telling him, hey, your call, it, you know, brought us back to who we you know, our original selves, and we feel obligated to, of course, help you out. And Aquaman's, okay, cool, let's do this. Well, not Aquaman, but Andy. And
yeah.
So they're fighting her, and they come up with this idea of, hey, if we...
Well, we didn't know it at first.
Yeah.
Like, in a way, I thought that they were actually legit sacrificing themselves. And I'm like, oh, man, I've been starting to like these old gods. Like, they're cool.
Yeah. They decide to sacrifice themselves. And I think it was genuine. I honestly think it was genuine until Kali talked to Andy about it.
Or Kali spoke with, maybe it was with, like, Tang.
Oh, it was with Tang.
Because Tang,
yeah,
because Tang was that big, like, the blue whale.
Yeah, that's right, that's right, yeah. That's right. So they all sacrifice themselves, and there's, like, this little, like, sliver of, like, I guess open skin or whatever, where these gods are going into Nama. But then they tell Aquaman or Andy, hey, you know, beckon them with your call. And so he uses it to the point where they can hear him inside of Nama. And so they all burst out, and it's pretty cool, but it drains Andy to, like, being crippled at this point, and he can't focus.
Yeah, and that's when he gets saved by, like, their father.
Yeah,
which was interesting.
Is Well, first, before he does that, you know, with the call also, with his, like, last piece of strength, he calls Krill to grab all the pieces of salt that is Nama and spreads it throughout the entire ocean all over the world, which
is genius.
What I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
So it means that they didn't necessarily kill her. There's a possibility that she can come back.
It'll just take a while.
It'll take a long while. But then their father, who we are assuming is their father, right? It doesn't necessarily say that, or does it say that?
No, I think they mention, like, you know, father, like, saved them. Or the old gods, when he grabbed Andy and brought him to the shore, the old gods bowed down and said, father.
Okay. Now, I do have to ask, is that Neptune?
Dude, I don't know.
I immediately thought it. I immediately saw him, and I said, if this is the father of the old gods of the ocean, it has to be Neptune.
The emblem kind of, in a way, could.
Well,
it could resemble it,
I mean,
possibly.
But also with the way Neptune kind of left Aquaman back in...
It could be.
So, I don't know. It's just... Because I know it was Neptune that ended up stabbing Aquaman in the first place, right? Back in Drowned Earth?
No, that was Poseidon.
Poseidon. You okay?
Yeah, Poseidon.
Okay. So,
I mean, I don't... I honestly have no idea who it could be. I mean, it would be interesting if it was Poseidon, and this is like his way of, you know, I don't know. When it comes to speculation, like on something like this, it's harder for me to speculate who it is. For me, it was easier on like Naomi, just because of the eyes, and for me to, there's a lot of things I can kind of like hear. I can't really put a, like, make a case for who it could be.
That's true. I could also say that maybe it's like the soul of the ocean, the character design for this was really cool. I don't know if I dig the like starfish thingy like covering his face, but the overall just look of him looks really cool. And of course he brings Andy to the surface. They all kind of have this, like, hooray, we did it, yay, kind of thing. One of the old gods places his arm on Andy, and he gets the tattoos. And he pretty much symbolizes, hey, you're getting these tattoos to show that you're one of us. It definitely kind of, from what we were hearing, the tattoos were supposed to do something with a mission that he was going to go on, or a journey that he was going to go on. That is not the case. It's just kind of like, here, now you have tattoos.
It felt to me, this moment is kind of like what ruined the book to me. Where to me it was like a solid, like I could say it was like a solid like 8
mm-hmm.
or an 8.5. But then this whole part bothered me because it felt super forced. I'm like, wow, do we have to implement the, you know, Jason Momoa vibe of like the Polynesian kind of thing, just to kind of that there is kind of like somewhat of a connection for those who, you know, one of the few people, well, not few, the one of the people that made Aquaman a $1 billion movie. Like, oh man, he has a tattoo. This is kind of like the same thing. He doesn't look like just the blonde, you know.
Well,
the blonde shirt.
The only
problem really did bother me.
The only problem that I have with it is, yeah, he has the Polynesian tattoos now, but he's still like tone wise, he's still white. Like his background is still the same. Like it just doesn't feel right to give him that. And I understand,
but it's a cheap way to get it.
Yeah, it really
is. It's just like, oh, the book's over. Okay, we got to give them tattoos. Boom, this is a gift. You're like an old god now that you belong to the ocean, and you know it's like you're honored to serve it. Okay, great.
I will say this: the way that people can get around with this is once he's Aquaman again, he's going to wear his suit, so you never see the tattoos.
I mean, I feel like those are the status quo things, that this is not going to be permanent. So it's like, I get it. But like, to me, if something like this is going to happen where I'm always going to see it now, I wanted it to be clever. And it just didn't feel clever. It felt like, wow, this is, what a way to shoehorn the movie stuff into a comic.
Yeah.
And it was, and it, to me, that's annoying.
Because it didn't even explain, oh, us new gods have these tattoos for this reason. Like, it was just like, boom, you have these. Like, you know?
Yes. Like, yeah, because like, I was actually on our Comic Book Legion Twitter page. Like, I was conversing with somebody, because I replied
it was...
to Aquamander, and because he was mentioning about how he really dug Aquaman. I'm like, dude, it was a really great story. I loved the arc. The tattoo part was eh, but then there was a Marfar 2, and they were just really upset. They didn't like the story arc at all, because Mera wasn't, like, in it whatsoever. And I'm like, I don't need to see Aquaman. I don't need to see Arthur and Mera in every single comic together. I mean, you're getting Mera in Justice League. It's like, it's okay for them to be apart. Like, those kind of things, I mean, after the incredible sacrifice that he made in Drowned Earth, sure, there's going to be a moment where he's got to kind of, like, find himself again and, like, you know, do, like, a repurpose. I'm okay with things straying away. And they're like, man, but it's been 5 issues. Like, Aquaman is not a successful book if them two, because that's a very classical.
Oh, you want to talk? Like, you want to talk about a long time without getting what you want? I still have Rick Grayson, so I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. Okay.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. So like those things. So it's kind of like, yeah, they it bother. Like, I guess you can be like, all right, I miss seeing this, but it's kind of, I don't know. I'm okay with short periods of time where you're, even if it's like a year or whatever, I don't mind seeing changes to a character, just because it makes things a little different. Because if not, I feel like I love the Flash. Flash is one of my favorite characters. And even I'm bored with the Flash book right now.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Like I'm just waiting for year one.
Yeah.
And, but I have I haven't even, besides getting like the Mitch Gerard's variant cover because it was amazing, I haven't been reading Flash because I have found Flash to be boring.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I can't do this right now. This has been, ever since the Flash War, and even some issues before that, ever since they did the emotional spectrum into the Flash with the Sage Force, Strength Force, Still Force, I'm like, dude, this is annoying. Like, this sucks. But I feel like it's being implemented in every book now, that I feel like that's a much bigger change, mm-hmm, than like these little tattoos and the Andy thing. But yeah, I'm like, Flash, I'm year one. I'll wait till then.
Yeah.
And then I'll start reading Flash again.
And you know, I think that for that argument, oh, we haven't seen Mera and Aquaman together, Crown of Thorns, Aquaman and Mera were completely separated for the entire thing, and that took, what, almost an entire year?
Like, yeah.
I know that people want more of it because of the movie, but we need to understand that movies and comics are separate. We can't always have it both ways.
Honestly, the worst thing that you can do to a movie is compare movies to the comic books, because then there is so much that you can get away with in a comic book that you can't with like a movie.
Yeah.
Like it's two different mediums, and you got to be able to accept that they're two different mediums and allow a little bit more liberties in the comic stream and know that, you know, some things are just not going to work.
For sure.
In a movie. But I mean, at least till this moment, not everybody can make that connection, or they can, they just don't admit it.
Yeah.
And they just want to hate on Twitter. So we'll end on this, which is Justice League number 22, which this is James Tynion.
He's
taken over with the Legion of Doom, the one shots that happen in between, like the massive main story points that that Scott Snyder is leading. And this was, I gotta say, this was a pretty great, not only for having Francis Manupal on art, but being able to kind of know more and the backstory of where Perpetua came to be and how she was imprisoned by her children. Mm. And now how she's possibly, well, it looks like, you know, from how it is at the end, on how she's going to play her part now in whatever Snyder is doing next. It was a pretty great comic.
And you know, with this, Snyder even said it yesterday. This is a continuation of the story, but it also counts as a one shot. So
yeah.
For any of those people who are not collecting Justice League right now, this is the year of the villain. This kind of shows where that is all going to start. If you're just collecting books, probably, you know, for me right now, I'm going digital, but as far as collecting, I'm collecting DC. This will probably be a book that I collect just because it will start the whole wave of DC villains. But it shows a really cool backstory on major characters that have been around since the 80s.
Yeah.
We know since the beginning of this arc that Perpetua is the mother of the Monitor, the Anti-Monitor, and now the World Forger that we learned about more last issue. But we see that she was never supposed to be evil.
Mm-hmm.
That is the crazy thing. And her existence was like... The really cool thing is that she created the three children to watch over the galaxy and the universe. And the Monitor, being so good at his job, was like, and I can't remember if this is a mature podcast or not, but I'm just going to say this. Monitor saw through the bullshit and was like, hey, I don't think you're supposed to be doing this. We got to settle some things out. And
yes, and that was great. I'm glad. And I thought that was important because, you know, you just get kind of the brief history on how it happened and how they found out what she was doing. I love that was like a good two pages of just dialogue on him absolutely just breaking down what she was doing, because you kind of see little by little how calculated everything was, but it also tells you how smart, you know, Marnovu is. And I was like, yeah, I like this. Like, it was pretty great, because you just see her absolutely just enjoying seeing these creatures just tearing into each other, and it was...
And one thing that I absolutely loved about this is, of course, it's a background on Perpetua, so you get to see a lot of her. You see a lot of the... Anti-Monitor, you see a lot of the Monitor. You don't see a lot of the World Forger, because we didn't learn about the World Forger until this arc here. So when it comes to history, when it comes to people who have been reading these books since the 80s, they know Anti-Monitor and the Monitor. That's who they know. And it shows here why the Anti-Monitor did what he did during Crisis.
Oh my gosh.
That was awesome.
That was the greatest highlight. You know what? Screw that. This Naomi's not better than this book. Cause now I'm like reliving what, dude, when you saw the Anti-Monitor and the Monitor discussing, and he's like, after we have contained her, you have left me. The wall has rendered what I was responsible for to be like a wasteland, while you're freaking doing like paradise with all these infinite universes. And he's like, this was the only way. And when he was kind of like, judgment be damned. And right from there, you're getting the narration, like, and then after that, a crisis. And I was like, oh, like, I changed my underwear. I did everything. I showered. I did, you know, like the Carlton dance. And then after that, I had to continue reading, because I was like, whoa, this is the greatest moment in this book, because that was an awesome callback.
And I will tell you, for everybody who's going out and buying Naomi number 4 for the wrong reasons, they should be buying this for the wrong reasons, because this is the origin of the crisis. I'm just going to say.
Yes.
It is the origin.
No, it is. It is.
It's the origin of the crisis, and people should not be sleeping on this book. It is amazing. I know at first I was very, very skitty on getting Justice League when it first came out, because I knew it was going to go back and forth between Snyder and Tynion. But I will say this, Snyder has been working with Tynion ever since freaking New 52. I didn't realize this because recently I've been reading that whole run again. They are awesome together. They bounce off of each other perfectly. They know how to work together. They know
not to bump heads, this story was so good.
Yes, it was.
I think just talking about it knocks it up to the top two.
No, like this, talking about it, because now it's like, it's one of those things like I remember, but then I was like, no, wait, how can I have forgotten this? How can I have said off that, like, Naomi, I believe, just because of the reveals and the little Easter eggs? Nah, screw that crap. No, it is 100% Justice League 22, because this is, in a way, this is how, like, the multiverse was rewritten back then. No, it's awesome. This was a super powerful book. And not even that, we get the reveal with Lex Luthor, with everything that's going on with Mixie. We have Batmite.
We only got to see a little bit of Batmite, unfortunately.
Yeah. But we got the reveal, because, you know, some were like, okay, who could it be? I was like, no, that's Batmite. That's his logo. But it was nice to see that it was just teased, where it's kind of like, you know, Batman's number one fan is here to save the day, and now you're just going to get, like, the Battle of the Imps, and I'm kind of, I'm down for that. But that reveal pales in comparison to what the rest of this book was.
Yeah,
and it was only magnified by how beautiful it was drawn.
And we also see that near the end of the book, we see Perpetua is now back. She is alive, and she is noticing the Legion of Doom at the very end of the story. That is, she is going to basically manipulate, I already see it, she's going to manipulate the Legion of Doom into creating mass chaos throughout the, like, I just know it. Like, that's, because that's what she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I can see where this is going. I am all for it. I love it. But I think, is that all five books? Naomi?
Yeah, Aquaman, Batman, Justice League, Naomi, and Teen Titans.
That is all five. Man. I'm kind of glad that we ended, because usually we start with the high and then we end with a low. I'm actually glad we ended on this high. Like, I am pumped. So
yes, I'm very I'm excited, man. This was it was one of those books that, because the thing is that I always read Justice League last. Mm-hmm. Well, I read anything with Snyder last, because there's just a lot of
exposition. Yeah.
So I read it last, and I was like, man, I can't believe that I read this last. I was kind of upset. I'm like, I could have just been happy the whole time. But in a way, I think, like, any other book, when I read it, I would be like, do whatever, bro. This is like Crisis on Infinite Earths. Like, I'm learning, like, why the Anti-Monitor was furious. Why is it that, no, loved it. Great book.
And I will say this. For anybody who is still listening to us that was listening to mine and Ashley's interview, Ashley and Jason on their Patreon do a Crisis Club. I'm going to have to go talk to them because they are doing 12 videos about Infinite Crisis, or not Infinite Crisis, Crisis on Infinite Earths. I'm going to have to go talk to them now and say, hey, you're going to have to do a bonus episode about the origins of the Crisis now. So,
oh, so good, man. Yeah, I'm actually right now on my Twitter going, like, talking about, like, the Justice League 22, because this is a book that needs to be shared.
Yeah, I will have to say, who, do you know who reviewed it for the website?
Since we got so many writers. Hey, if you are interested in wanting to write, we got a whole bunch of comic books that are there for the taking that we would love to have you contribute. It was actually Jacob, Nerdgrounds Jake. Yeah, you should go check them out. The Nerdgrounds podcast with Jake and Blake. And I didn't even realize that their names rhyme. Jake and Blake. But yeah, they have an awesome podcast. It's actually featured on the website, comicbooklegion.com. And the last two episodes, they've done a breakdown of the Star Wars trailer and a top 10 of their favorite Game of Thrones episodes. So if you are a Game of Thrones fan, go ahead and check out that podcast. But they talk everything. They talk comics. They talk video games. They do it all. So it's a really cool podcast. Then you got Clay's podcast, Fanboy Comics Podcast.
Yes.
Right? Fanboy yes. Comics? Yeah. Because he has Fanboy Clay. I'm like, no, Fanboy Clay Comics. No, that's not what it is.
Yeah.
Fanboy Comics. And, you know, he spoke with Ashley Robinson, which was a really cool interview.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. a lot of the episodes that are coming out after that will be some that were done at a later date, or previous date, sorry. And so we may have a little bit of those plugs from the old show. The old show actually gave me some of the old episodes that I can read, so the Nation of Nerds guys can listen to it as well. But I have a few other guests that I'm planning for this month to record, all of next month. So I'm really starting to really look at pushing that show on this network. It's going to be a lot of fun. But yeah, just like Mark had said, if you guys are interested in writing reviews for us, we are not just a website about DC, we are a site about Marvel, anything comic book related, anything nerd.
Yeah, all publishers, yes.
Anything nerd related. If there's a movie that you really, really dig and you want a review out, come to us about it. We will be more than willing to let you write a review about it. Because I like movie reviews. Kevin's movie review on Shazam was awesome. I really enjoyed reading it. I love that movie. But yeah, guys, definitely go check out the website, comicbooklegion.com. Check out our Twitter, CB_Legion. I am at Fanboy Clay. My podcast show, Fanboy Comics Podcast, is at Fanboy Comics Pod. Mark, where can I find you?
You can find me at Mark Fossus, and if you want to follow just Nation of Nerds, which kind of hosts everything and just shares everything that's going on within the network, that can just be found at Nation of Nerds. Man, yeah, besides that, I have a question. And the question is, due to how amazing Justice League is, and this is for our giveaway, and April is closing up. So,
and I will just have to say, with all those who are still interested in answering the questions from the previous episodes, you have to one up Tony Walton. Tony Walton has been on top of all of these questions. I want to give him a shout out. He is awesome. He is the real MVP. So yeah, go answer those questions from episodes 1, 2, and 3. And is this number 4? No, this is number 5, right?
No, it was number 5,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, so go answer the first 4 questions. We had 2 episodes that were in March, so, or I believe just 1 episode that was, right? I'm losing track of time.
I have no idea. Time flies by so quickly. Just know that this is going to be, when you hear this, 5 episodes. So this one and the 4 previous ones.
Yes.
Just listen to them all, because that's when it starts from this giveaway. So the question that I have in honor of Crisis on Infinite Earths, I would love for you guys just to share your story of what were your thoughts when you first read that comic and when you read that event. Did you read it when it first came out? Or is this something that once you became, like for myself, I read the book 20 years after it was released.
Yeah.
So for me, it played a big role in terms of everything, because then that kind of helps with what the hell did I read with Infinite Crisis? Like, it helps connect a lot of the dots in regards to what we now know as the multiverse and everything like that. So if I just want to know your story, what was your experience reading Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Awesome. That is awesome. I will say, first time I read Crisis on Infinite Earths was one of the first books that I read after getting permission to start collecting comics whenever I was in high school. My dad bought me the trades of JLA versus the Avengers, Infinite Crisis, and Crisis on Infinite Earths. So it was one of the first 3 books that I had in my collection.
Oh, nice. Yeah. My first experience with Crisis on Infinite Earth, a friend of mine gave me his trade so that I can kind of just read it, because he was like, no, this is an essential. This is a book you need to read. Since I was new into comics, it was kind of like the only stuff I was interested in were books that looked pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Once you give me Batman Hush, don't give me a book from the 80s and expect me to want to read it, because it looks like, you know, caca to my eyes of being uninitiated. So I initially saw Crisis on Infinite Earths, and I'm like, oh, man, this George Perez guy, he sucks. That's my first. And then Can you imagine the blasphemy that just came out of my mouth?
Wow.
That was my initial reaction just getting into comic. I'm like, dude, I am not going to read this garbage.
I don't think we can be friends, Mark.
No. This was old Mark. This was like noob Mark. So then he goes, okay. He gave me Dark Knight Returns. And I'm like, Frank Miller. I'm like, oh, God, this art's even worse. I'm not going to read this crap.
Okay, I can agree with that.
Okay, so that was kind of like how I was as a comic reader. I just wanted pretty books. But then it got to that point, like, I didn't even want to read Animal Man because I thought Travel Foreman sucked.
Oh, I was like, man.
But that's the thing. But then I was like, I don't know. I think my eyes started opening thanks to creator-owned comics. And you start to see how important art is to telling the actual story. And then I started reading a lot of Fourth World stuff and Jack Kirby. And then I started to appreciate. I'm like, oh my gosh. So then I got to the point where I read Crisis on Infinite Earths, and what George Perez was able to do with that book was incredible. Very powerful, very emotionally gripping. Because yes, it was Marv Wolfman wrote one incredible story, but what they did together was, yeah. But my initial reaction was, are you a gamer, Clay?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so I'm kind of like a sports nut in video games, and then when I have time, you know, I'll do my Splinter Cells, my Metal Gears, and I love playing games. I was introduced to Fallout 4. I don't know if you've played Fallout. Well, I've never played one of those, like, Oblivion, Elder Scrolls, like, the Bethesda kind of games.
Uh-huh.
So I bought the Fallout 4. I played it for, I don't know, 30 minutes. I was like, this is the worst game I have ever played in my life. Then I get my GameStop Game Informer subscription, and it's Game of the Year. I'm like, what the? Like, the game that I just bought, this is Game of the Year? This game's crap. So the idiot that I am, I just spent $60. I traded the game in. They gave me like 20, and now I just rebought the game. So I spent $120 on the game. So then I rebought Fallout 4 because I had to find out why Game Informer is saying that this is Game of the Year, and that's probably one of my favorite games.
Nice.
It's kind of like you have to be open to different formats, different ways of storytelling, different visuals, and that was a good lesson. The way that I was at first. That you're just kind of judging something and you're not giving it any type of chance. There's something special in all this kind of stuff that we're reading and we're watching, and it's, you know, you can't just judge it based on an initial taste, because I mean, even with food, you know, it has to become an acquired taste. You gotta kind of like dive in, maybe struggle a bit, but then you'll really learn to appreciate how it was, and that's how I felt, and that's what Crisis on Infinite Earth is probably one of the first books that gave me. Like an open mind with creator-owned in sorts of all different types of art, because man, reading books in the 70s is rough.
Yeah, for sure. It really is.
But it's kind of like when you learn about the artists and then the times, and you know, you see the little intricacies that they use that were very, it was really clever at that time.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice. So yes. Anyways, besides my long ramble, go ahead and let us know your stories and your experience with Crisis on Infinite Earth. And besides that, I don't know. Are we good? Anything, Clay?
No, I think we're good, guys.
All right, then we are good, and we will talk to you guys next week.
See you. All right, later.